Welcome to another special episode of Atlanta's only pro-business radio talk show. Broadcasting live from the heart of Buckhead inside the Business Radio X studios.
All right, Rich Casanova here, host of, I'm just going to say Buckhead Business Radio. That's one of our other shows. This is a food and beverage radio, which is a special spotlight episode we do to kind of spotlight and feature and talk about the folks doing good work here throughout Atlanta and throughout Georgia for in the food and beverage industry. We have some great guests joining us here in the studio. We'll just kind of say hi to each guest briefly and then jump into our individual interviews as well. So let's go ahead and start and just introduce joining us in the studio is Jay Bandy. Jay, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Rich.
And you're with Consulting Group, right? Goliath Consulting?
Yes, Goliath Consulting Group. We've been in business 6 years here in the Atlanta metro area.
Okay. And what do y'all do to help folks? What's your claim to fame or what we call a unique selling proposition? What makes you kind of different, unique?
Really what makes us different, we're really soup to nuts.
Okay.
So, you know, a lot of consultancies specialize in parts and pieces of the business, but we do everything from brand conception through operating companies, been in business 20 years, are our clients. So we have a host of folks that we work with that fill in the gaps, as I say, accountants and lawyers and architects and contractors and those kind of folks. But, you know, for the most part, we work with independents and chain restaurants throughout here in the Southeast, but also across the country.
Okay. And soups to nuts. So nuts, or is that bolts and nuts or the pecans or just everything A to Z, right?
Yeah. Everything A to Z, absolutely. The only thing we don't do is legal and accounting.
Oh,
so
okay.
We outsource those.
Okay, nice. Well, I didn't let our guests know, but we are a Atlanta's only pro-business radio station. So there's no gotcha questions, no 60 minutes, no ambush questions. But every once in a while, I throw you what I think
I
is funny.
I was looking forward to that.
Oh, man, yeah.
To be hard-hitting.
Nice. Okay, that's Fred joining us in the studio here. That's a great segue for introduction. And Fred Castellucci?
Yes.
All right.
Good work. But
I'm excited.
You're Italian, too, Castanova.
I
should have done that right away.
I know. If I got that wrong, I'd be in big trouble. Yeah. I'm going to say quarter Italian. So grandfather Celestino Casanova, and then Irish, French, and Spanish.
I'm a mutt as well, but when you got a name like Federico Castellucci or Rich Casanova, you just have to roll with it.
Yeah, just stay with that. Yeah. For this hour, we're 100% Italian.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so Fred, soup to nuts, or what are you guys doing over there?
So we own 4 restaurants kind of all over the metro area. Sugo in Johns Creek, Double Zero in Sandy Springs, Iberian Pig in Decatur, and then our newest, which is Cooks and Soldiers in the West Side, West Midtown.
Yeah, I'm somewhat familiar with the others. I live in Sandy Springs. Double Zero, I can almost stumble home from there
exactly.
On Hammond. Hammond. But interesting about the Soldiers and...
Cooks and Soldiers.
Oh, Cooks and Soldiers.
Yeah, that's our newest restaurant. It's located in West Midtown, right at 14th Street in Howell Mill, and it's a... the cuisine is Basque cuisine, so northern Spain, southern France, border region, and based on kind of my travels through that area. And I was originally looking to pick up some ideas for Iberian Pig, which is really just general Spanish tapas, but I found so much while I was there that I really just wanted to do a whole restaurant just based on that one cuisine. And so far, it's been open 8 months, and it's been fantastic so far.
Nice. Awesome. You look a little young to be operating 4 restaurants.
I got into it at a pretty early age.
Yeah.
And I went to hospitality school at Cornell and got out and had the opportunity to take over the Sugo restaurant in Johns Creek right after it had gone out of business. And so I jumped into that opportunity with very little capital and just turned it around and then did my first original concept Iberian Pig in 2009.
Well, don't give away too many of the secrets here. We're going to jump in depth here in just a moment. But so gone out of business, that's pennies on the dollar on that one, right?
Yeah.
Bargain.
It worked out.
Okay. So for listeners that were hoping to tune and listen to Dawn Hall, And it's interesting because I was up at in Alpharetta at the food truck alley, got a picture of myself in front of Dawn's food truck. So definitely have her back on a future show. And she's with Happy Belly because I know there was some Twitter conversation. So or maybe if she's listening, bring the truck, bring some food. We'll have a party afterwards, right? Okay, so having said all that, we want to welcome our first guest here in the studio, joining us from NCR Silver. And it's interesting... concept there we're going to talk about is kind of all that's involved in the food industry. And obviously, you know, you got to, money's got to change hands, but in your case, you're kind of bringing something new to the table. So Chris?
Palma.
Palma. Okay, I was going to try to throw something Italian in there. Yeah, what's your background?
Dutch, yeah.
No, oh, Dutch. Okay. So tell us about, I'll just kind of hit some high points for information I have. So you joined NCR just April 2 this year?
Yes.
Okay. As the corporation, as president and general manager of NCR Small Business, you oversee a very talented, ambitious team driving innovation in terms of sales, premier technology, and partners for small business. Now, prior, you were at QuickCart. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, so it's basically my background is steeped in mobile and SaaS-based technology.
Right.
And it's bringing what is mobile and SaaS-based technology to the food industry. And in this case, Happy Belly, as an example, is right. One of our customers
okay.
that works on Silver. And it's the ability to download right out of the App Store, basically a point of sale, so that it's easy to get access to if you're a small business.
Right.
You just go to the App Store, download it on an iPad. We've got other bundles, cash register, wireless printers, wireless barcode readers that you can scan your items, whether you're a food store or a small retailer. We work one register to multiple registers within a store.
Well, you guys have certainly been around long enough. You're not the new kid on the block, right?
we like to say it's 130 years of history
wow.
jammed into the last half of a decade. So
right, yeah.
A lot of experience in small business on Silver.
So. And definitely fast tracking right now. And speaking of startups or your past, you were also a co-founder and served as a CTO, and you assisted in the initial IPO of U.S.
Internet working.
Tell us about that. Or,
yeah, so USI was a company that was founded 4 years after e-commerce was basically invented and web was, I'm dating myself right now.
Right.
You all can't see me, but actually I look like a 21-year-old, right?
So long as you don't say before radio, you're fine. Yeah.
But we were the first, what was at the time, application service provider, what is today. It's the precursor to SaaS. So I've
okay.
been involved in mobile and wireless technology and software as a service for the last 22 plus years.
Yeah, it looks like that. And closed over $7 million in private equity. Any leftovers you brought with you? That's a lot of cash.
It was all spent supporting back then, right? Supporting your customers.
Yeah. All right. So let's kind of jump back into the small division of NCR. You mentioned aggressively the last number of years, they've really kind of, because we think of NCR as kind of in the big boys arena, whatever, right?
Yeah, so NCR is reinventing itself. And Bill Nudi, our CEO, has really driven the corporation forward globally in a reinvention that starts with a large financial services division, all the way down to small businesses. And with that reinvention, it's innovative new products that we have and will continue to bring to market. It's, in fact, we just announced we're standing up a large campus adjacent to Georgia Tech here.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's something north of 500,000 square feet building where we're have the property and are in the process of putting a building right next to Georgia Tech. Will be bringing thousands of jobs to the Atlanta area.
Wow. And is that in alliance with the university or is it just proximity?
What's the
partnership?
So there's a tight coupling. I don't know all the fine details.
Okay.
I know that there is a tight coupling between NCR corporate and Georgia Tech and some of the incubation that's going
right.
on
oh, yeah.
in the lab and some of the lab work over at Georgia Tech. And so we're excited to be a part of the community there and provide an opportunity for all the graduates, not just Georgia Tech,
right.
Georgia State and the other Emory and the other fine right. colleges that are and universities that are in the area.
Pretty smart on y'all's part, right? So basically they can get their diploma. They don't even have to move off campus. They can walk right into the door and start their career.
Yeah. In fact, you know, maybe we'll set up a foyer that's adjacent right. to, and you could just literally move from your class directly over into the office in NCR Corporate.
Yeah. Great stuff. So so back to this, the idea of the mobile business, and we mentioned Happy Belly. Y'all are quite involved in some of the Atlanta food festivals and the food trucks and the real sense of mobile. I mean,
right. So let's a little bit a word and shout out on that. So again, if you're whether you're a food truck operator owner or whether you're a small business that requires mobility, the ability to run your transactions, be able to take payment, the ability to basically whether it's cash or credit card or debit card, be able to take payment, be able to ring up your items. And on the back end, all of it is 100% tracked and managed for you so that through the back office, you know, as a small retailer, small restaurant, you have access to all of your data and your history. So, you know, food trucks like Happy Belly are mobile. And right. so point of sale has to be lightweight, just like an iPad is, right?
Right?
You can take it with you. You can whip it out. You can through the MagStrip reader that's associated with the iPad or iPhone, or we also have Android solutions as well,
right.
and to be able to you know, manage your business in a mobile fashion.
Yeah, I'm a Droid guy. I always feel like I'm in the minority. Everybody's like, serious.
No, we're equal opportunity. We
good.
Support
because I always feel offended. Everybody's like, get all excited. We had somebody in the studio yesterday and had this really cool app, and then I was download it. No, you have to have the Apple. I'm like, all right. So meanwhile, so this mobility, so in a bricks and mortar establishment, obviously as well. So you're talking about this is a, where folks like at, Fred's establishments, is this where waiters are kind of, flying around with, tablets and,
can be yeah. just to, you know, as an example, we have large national, franchises like Waffle House.
Right.
If you were to go into Waffle House.
I've heard of them.
Yeah. Great food, by the way.
Right.
Shout out to them. To as small as, you know, a single store taco stand that might be just carry out, right? You walk up to the window, you order your taco items, and you grab them and you go to a food truck, to
a hot dog cart or
exactly
lemonade stand. Now, yeah, the kids, I just thought that the kids could be selling lemonade for 50 cents yeah. and using the NCR silver.
No? We're that flexible. That's the intent. It's meant to be. It's meant to be not only for the mainstream, but for the edge cases. Anyone that really needs to be able to transact and manage their products or services that they're selling in a mobile way.
And obviously all cloud-based, which then as a proprietor or as a consumer, big issue in terms of security, but 130 years, I think you guys probably cracked the code on that one, right?
We have. We're maniacal about our security okay. in terms of encryption, data encryption, back and forth, PCI compliance, EMV compliance level 1 and 2, which are now coming out in the forefront this October. So you'll see some announcements soon in relation to it. So we're there. We're not only supporting it, but we're continually pushing ourselves to ensure that what happened in the retail market over the last few years, you know, we don't see.
Right, so. Right. And so obviously this is food and beverage radio, so we're talking a lot of restaurants and what have you, but this is across all, you know, platforms, and you mentioned national chains. So, I mean, what is there certain business sectors that are kind of just a perfect fit or...
Well, we support hair salons, nail salons. I believe
radio stations. Can we test it here? Can everybody just real quick? Just grab your wallet, real quick, okay? Or your smart device. Chris, help me out
transaction.
Here.
Yeah, that's right.
Just really, just need to run a minimal $100 transaction just to see if it works. Yeah.
You sure not $1,000?
I guess I did shoot a little low. Yeah.
So yeah, we run the gamut. You know, a large percentage, obviously, we're within the prepared food market space.
Okay.
We have packaged foods, and again, we're North America, limited usage in EMEA over in Europe,
okay.
and we're extending the back half of this year and into next year throughout Asia Pacific and internationally.
Wow, good stuff. So, again, you do have this. I mean, have you kind of really partnered with some of these festivals and events? Or, I mean, how do y'all establish new business or new clients? I mean, been around forever, but this is something new to the marketplace, right?
Yeah, the truth is, one of the benefits, and it's with our NCR, it's both a challenge, truthfully. We have quite a bit of inbound requests.
Right.
So due to our history, due to the background, we receive a lot of requests from our inside sales teams. They receive a number of calls on a daily and hourly basis. The challenge is to make sure that we don't rest on those laurels and we're bringing a product continually to market that's not only valuable and in demand and secure, but ultimately we want to ensure above all, and this is an NCR mantra, not just small business,
right.
not just my division, but the entire company. We work very hard to make sure that we wrap our arms around our customers and really take care of them. So ultimately, customer service and making sure that the product that we're bringing to market is of value to them. But to answer your original question, we get receive a lot of inbound and a lot of word of mouth. You keep talking about our embrace of the Atlanta. We love the Atlanta market. We just came back from the Atlanta Street Food Festival.
Yeah, that's what I heard about that, yeah.
Over 60. It started at 30 and then it worked to 50, and there were over 60 food trucks
that
were there, live music. Over 41,000 tickets pre-sold. The line at one point off of the main street that runs across the high school, it ran 2.5 blocks down and to the left, down halfway down another block just to gain entrance on what was one of four locations.
Oh, that's bizarre.
It's the fourth year. Next year, you got to go to it.
This was only the fourth year?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, it's amazing. And the foods and the flavors, and it was amazing.
Well, we have that Taste of Buckhead coming up here, I think, in September. So, I know there's the food truck. There's a lot of pockets where, like I mentioned in Alpharetta, I was at Food Truck Thursday, or I think they call it whatever it is every Thursday. But any idea statistically how many food trucks are in the Atlanta market? I've never really...
So there are.
I guess we could Google that. Somebody Google that real quick. Yeah, Erica, can you? You'll be our fact checker for today's broadcast. Yeah.
So I think there's several hundred, and we as a small business support a large percentage of those within the market. Nationally, we support thousands. We have tens of thousands of small businesses.
Are you familiar with the was it the food truck movement? Because they were in the studio a while back, and they have a unique positioning where most people may not realize it, but as a food truck, you need to have a commercial kitchen to back you up, right? To operate, to have your license, apparently, from what I know.
Right.
And so they kind of provide that turnkey service for that independent solo entrepreneur.
Right.
Right. And then, and they've designed some pretty crazy names for some of these food trucks, and Paul over there and those guys. So
yeah, very creative names.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, so stick around, Chris. Before we move to our next guest, let our listeners know what's the best way to find about you and your services and the company and what we've been talking about.
Yeah, pretty easy. The best way is ncrsilver.com.
Okay. Wow, no hyphens or underscores or digits or, yeah, that's pretty straightforward, yeah. All right, so thanks again for being on the show. We'll stick around for some more follow-up questions.
Great to be here.
Absolutely. Okay, so just want to remind our listeners, you're listening to Food and Beverage Radio. Your host here, Rich Casanova, on a beautiful, amazing Wednesday afternoon here in Buckhead. You can't get any better, right? Except for we had some food here. Jay, have you made it down to your car yet or no? That's okay. We got coffee. We got mints here in the studio. But meanwhile, so let's join our next guest here, Fred. Interesting conversation so far, yes or yes?
Yeah, absolutely. We're a customer of NCR.
Oh, okay, good.
Well,
yeah. Well, that's great, because otherwise I'm like, I didn't want to ask or whatever. No, we've never heard of these guys.
Yeah, we were talking in the lobby about some of the things that we like to use in our business that are great, that really allow me to keep my thumb on things.
Yeah, because that's what the point I was going to, I got sidetracked, but I was going to mention, being cloud-based. So your restaurateurs, Fred, for example, when you're remote and you're not there overseeing things, you can have real-time access, I would imagine, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's one of the things we were exactly talking about.
Okay.
Is being able to see in real time everything that's going on in the business, right down to if you're sitting in one of the restaurants, I can look at what's on your check and what's been ordered and what's been comped and all that stuff. So, and how much you left as a tip, because I get to know.
Don't look at me when you say that or whatever. Yeah. There's a comedian used to say he would, when he's at a restaurant, he'd pull the, he intentionally pull the server back over and look all confused. Excuse me. And hold the receipt. What's 3% of this right here? just to make him sweat for a minute. Right. Yeah.
I can tell you from experience, servers love it when you do that.
Oh yeah. I'm sure
really
it goes up real big. Yeah. All right, so Fred, so let's kind of jump in a little bit of your background. I'm going to hit a couple of points. You'll feel free to elaborate or exaggerate or add to it.
Yeah.
As you mentioned, graduate hospitality school at Cornell University. You've been in the restaurant business since a small child?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, my family's been in the restaurant business for almost 100 years.
Oh, geez.
And started in Rhode Island and with my great-great-great-grandfather and a little Greek diner. So I'm part Greek as well.
Oh, okay.
And so that's really where the family got its start in the restaurant business. And so,
yeah, my family folklore, we had a restaurant up in New York, like in a basement. My grandfather back to, I guess prohibition or something like that. It was a little illegal stuff going on.
But, that doesn't sound exactly like a restaurant to me,
no,
actually.
It doesn't.
It sounds like something totally different.
Yeah. I guess, well, I've not been in the restaurant business. I can't even identify a restaurant. So, so that's interesting. So 100 years. So they could have been using the cash registers from NCR back in the day in a former generation, right?
You never know.
You never know. Okay. So, talked about the Iberian pig. For those folks that are, let's kind of knock down one restaurant at a time. Those folks aren't familiar with each of these. What's kind of unique about the pig?
Sounds great. The Iberian Pig is a Spanish tapas restaurant, and so it takes its inspiration from all over Spain. And we have a wide selection of Spanish wines as well as meats, cheeses. The name itself, the Iberian Pig, comes from the black-footed Iberian pigs that roam Spain and make the famous Iberico charcuterie cuts. So they have this really nutty, intense, delicious flavor. If you've ever had them, it's pretty incredible. It's like prosciutto kind of doesn't even compare. And that's one of the central parts of the concept, in addition to, you know, a lot of creative, unique tapas dishes. And we source a lot of our ingredients actually locally. And then for some of the, you know, key Spanish ingredients, we import them from Spain.
Okay. And so talk to us about Double Zero.
Double Zero is all about Southern Italy. And so that Neapolitan food culture, which really starts with Neapolitan style pizza. We use the Stefano Ferrara ovens from Naples. We do the classic recipe with Double Zero flour, of course, and therefore you have the connection to the name. Okay. And we also have a full menu of, you know, fresh handmade pastas. We make all of our own desserts, gelato in-house. We have a lot of other small plates and as well entrees. So there's quite a lot that we do at Double Zero.
And when did that open?
That's been open since 2011.
You're correct. May of 2011. Just fact checking here.
Thank you.
I have to jump in.
Sometimes I forget.
You're actually making us hungry here.
I know. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly my point. All right. So so talk to us about now the newest venture in your enterprise here in world domination in the food business is Cooks.
I don't know about world domination. But
start with Atlanta. Move from there.
One at a time.
So Cooks and Soldiers.
Yeah, Cooks and Soldiers is really based on my travels through the Basque region of Spain and France. And this region is very unique. The people are different from the rest of Spain and France. And it's almost like they're their own race and they have their own language and very unique. And they really have no desire to be part of either culture. They don't want to be Spanish. They don't want to be French. And so I was really struck by the culture and then the food culture really that is happening in San Sebastian and some of the surrounding areas is one of the most exciting in the world, and more Michelin stars per capita than any city in the world in San Sebastian. If you ever have the opportunity to go, people always think when they go to Spain, they got to go to Barcelona or Madrid. And honestly, those are just kind of stopping points to the rest of the country, which is really exciting. And the Basque region specifically is one of the coolest places you can visit because it's this incredible culinary city with lots of culture right on the ocean.
Wow.
With beautiful beaches. And it's pretty hard to beat.
Yeah, I was in Barcelona for the Olympics and then over to Valencia. But but the influence is not necessarily in those regions per se.
Yeah, I mean, it really is all over. But, you know, Spain, much like France and Italy is a very regional country, and there's a lot in each region, and similar even to the United States. You know, we're a very regional kind of culture, and but you see that even more definitively over there.
So Cooks and Soldiers, what's the behind the name there?
So actually, there's a big festival in San Sebastian that happens every year called Tamborada, and the whole village dresses up like Cooks and Soldiers and marches through the city and parties for 24 hours.
Wow.
So that was really the inspiration behind it.
So and you guys celebrate that over here?
We do. It's January 20th. We're actually in the process.
That could be a little dicey or whatever, right?
Yeah. We're in the process of putting together our own plan for doing like a big over-the-top Tamborada celebration.
Okay.
Last year, we did something a little bit smaller, and we, you know, had like drummers going through the restaurant and, it, you know, different family style dishes that are traditional Basque dishes. But this year, I think we're going
to
do...
Take it to the streets.
Yeah, it's going
to
be big.
Yeah.
So we're going to do something.
Well, if you drink enough, then weather's not an issue, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Exactly.
So so back at Rewind.
It's like a Bass St. Paddy's Day. That's what we're going to go for.
I'm in. Yeah. We got to wait till January to do this?
Yeah. It's a Wednesday, so get ready.
Oh, okay. We'll do Food and Beverage Radio live from there.
Yeah, there you go. Let's do it.
All right. It's on the calendar. Erica, can you make that happen? Or is it? I keep pointing to you like you're in charge here or something, right? You're just here taking pictures. Aren't you taking some picture for social media or something? Yeah. Okay, good, good. I like to give you a fair share of trouble, too, even though you're not joining us on the show yet. Maybe next time. All right, so meanwhile, back to Fred. So what's your role there at CHG?
So I try to hire myself out of a role, to be honest.
Okay.
Currently, I oversee the big picture type stuff, new concepts, new real estate selection, getting the restaurants open, you know, making sure that they're off to a successful start, making sure that they're maintaining profitability. I oversee the financials for the company as well. And, you know, I just recently hired a in-house accountant, which has helped kind of take some of that off my plate, which has been nice because I was managing it all before. But, you know, making sure that the viability of the business from a financial standpoint is there and will continue to be there for years to come. And, you know, how do we use our capital and for new locations versus, you know, kind of sticking to what we're doing well. And then, you know, the HR piece, making sure that the right managers are in the right positions at all the restaurants and that we're monitoring everybody's performance and seeing how well they're doing. And so I really look at it as those kind of three general areas is, you know, making sure the business is financially healthy, making sure that the people in the business are doing a great job and that we have a great culture that people want to be a part of and that attracts new talent. And then what's the next step? Like, what are the next restaurant concepts that we decide to do?
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. That's a lot on your plate right there to start with. But, you know, the restaurant business, most people would imagine it's a lot of fun. It's very entertaining. But yeah, if you're not watching the dollars in the sense, it's going to be gone. Right.
Yeah.
So the other part's easy, right?
In our business because people get into it and think it's going to be glamorous. And you know, that they're going to hang out at the bar with their buddies and have drinks. And then
it's not
what
you
realize.
No.
The last thing you want to do is be hanging out at the bar with your buddies, drinking your
exactly,
profit, make enough money so you can go to somebody else's bar.
Place. Yeah. Trash that. I mean, enjoy that venue. Yeah. Okay. So let's, you mentioned a couple of times about new ventures. So what's on the horizon? What's next? Another bricks and mortar, maybe a food truck or a drive-through window.
So funny you mentioned food trucks. My opinion on food trucks in general, if I'm not willing to work in the business, I'm not going to do it. So, my idea of a good time is not getting in a small confined space in 100-degree Atlanta summer, behind a stove. So, that's probably never going to happen for us.
Maybe
to
a food tent, something like that, or a RV. Yeah. You need an RV. That's what you little AC.
Again, too confined.
Okay.
So
what is
not something that we're going to do? You know, there's a lot of things I'd like to do on the upscale fine dining side in Atlanta. Stuff that I think is missing, and I think there's still a lot more we can do there. I also look at other markets where I think our concepts would work, even in just in the Southeast is. You know, a natural extension, whether that be, you know, Charleston or Nashville or cities like that, where I think there's a demand for the types of concepts that we do. So I think there are opportunities there. And I think ultimately we'll, you know, try our hand at something that's more casual, maybe more duplicatable, but that's, you know, way down the line. I really have a passion for fine dining and putting out a exceptional product.
Right.
And I'd like to continue to do that for a while.
Maybe a little Greek, throw a little Greek in the mixer.
Maybe, you never know.
I don't know how to really phrase this question, but as a restaurateur, is this a challenge of you've established this unique independent restaurant that each one of them stand on their own? So you talked about taking something to Charleston or opening another Double Zero in, you know, Peachtree City or north up in Canton or somewhere. Does that dilute the brand or people do love that idea? It's like there's only one, right?
Yeah, no, I love the idea that there's only one, but it also, there's a caveat to that. Yeah. You know, I believe if the brands are extremely well established over many years,
right,
there can be an opportunity to take that brand to another part of the city that, you know, never gets to experience it.
Right.
So you just have to be very careful with that. And it comes down to site selection. So, you know, I think that Iberian Pig in Decatur has a huge following.
Bro, but, yeah.
You know, in Buckhead, how many people are able to make it to Decatur that frequently? Very few.
That's a good point. So there's a spot. There actually, a restaurant just closed down the street right here. Stake that out. Yeah.
So, but you know, in my opinion, I don't know if Iberian Pig yet is enough of an established concept for us. I mean, it's 6 years old now, which is getting close to that point. But you really want the brand to be unique and established and one of a kind before you kind of take the show on the road.
Yeah, and if it's in a completely different market, I think that's kind of helps with that, you know, challenge. But
yeah,
I mean, look at like Ted's Montana Grill. It's all over the country and it's kind of quick, easy dining. It's but each, you feel when you go there, it's kind of its own character. It's not like a as big of a chain as you would think.
Yeah, well, I didn't start out as a billionaire and when I started my restaurant company, so, you know, taking it on across the nation. And I would ask Ted Turner if he feels like that was a good use of his resources over that period of time.
Yeah. Huh. Well, we'll have him in next week and see what his response is. Yeah, Ted, if you're listening, it's an open invite. All right. So so thanks for being here on the show, Fred. And so what's the best way for listeners to find out about your restaurants and goings on?
I would say, you know, visit one of the restaurants, either Iberian Pig in Decatur, Double Zero in Sandy Springs, Sugo in Johns Creek, or Cooks and Soldiers in West Midtown and check it out. You can also find us online just by doing a simple Google search.
Any of those, yeah. To coming to your, wherever your favorite zip code is, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks again for joining us on the show. Stick around. Maybe thank some you. Additional questions here. And like we like to say, our anchor man joining us in the studio. Jay, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Rich.
So some good stuff so far, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, this is all in your wheelhouse.
It's all in my wheelhouse.
Right?
Absolutely.
So so speaking of your wheelhouse, let's kind of talk a little bit about your background. So 30 years experience in the restaurant industry and business leadership at McDonald's. They've been around for a while, right?
They have.
And RTM. What's RTM and Blimpie? I know Blimpie.
Yeah, RTM's interesting. If you worked for RTM, it was Results Through Meetings.
Okay.
It started out as Russ, Ted, Mike.
All right.
they were Arby's franchisees in a big way. Started out with one or two and built it up to 750.
Oh, wow.
And also, they owned the Mrs. Winner's and Lee's Famous Recipe brands back in the day.
Wow. I learned something new right there. All right. So, and now you started Goliath Consulting Group, the 3 G's. Typo there, yeah, in my mind. But in 2009, several McDonald's executives joined you in the business?
Yes, yes. We the leadership team kind of dissolved here in the Atlanta market, so I brought some people with me when I started my company.
And this included international, regional chains, as well as, we mentioned, independent restaurants. You've worked with, as you mentioned, Mrs. Winter's, Cheeseburger Bobby's, and a brand new startup at Pont City Market.
Correct.
What's the new venture
it's,
there?
It's called Marrakesh. It's okay. A Mediterranean market. It's going to be Moroccan with some Israeli influences.
Oh, wow. And is that already, how far along are they?
We're looking about 4 weeks out from today to open. So
okay.
It's getting close.
So this, when you're at events, I'm just thinking like networking events used to go back in the day, you know, what do? It's, you got your insurance agent, your realtors, your CPA, so forth. People ask you a restaurant consultant. What is that? I think we'd get an idea what you do, but, share with us.
Yeah, it's, it's interesting. You know, over the years of my career, I was always a consultant for a lot of those years. And so, you know, a consultant fills gaps for business owners. So if a business owner is not good at real estate, that's not their forte, that some folks aren't financially, you know, they don't have the financial background.
Right.
If they need help equipment sourcing, they don't understand supply chain, they understand about POS like NCR supplies. So what restaurant consultants really do is help people fill gaps in their business to be successful. So I have gone into that restaurant where the owner was sitting at the bar drinking his money away. luckily, it was a partner when the partners bought the other one out. So, you know,
I've
also
seen that happen in my business too. I'd buy that guy out.
Oh, really? And he was looking at Jay, but he wasn't guilty or anything. He was looking at Fred. Yeah. So, yeah, that would be an interesting conversation to have with that guy. So he hires you. I mean, there's the shows I'm thinking of. What's it, The Prophet or some of these shows? Or there's one that turns around restaurants, right?
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of those guys. And it's funny because everyone always asks me, do you watch those shows?
Right, yeah.
And I go, no, because that's not actually how it works.
Right, yeah. It's like a cop watching a TV, a cop drama, right?
Yeah, because it's a lot of work. When you're talking about turning around a restaurant, it's a lot about behaviors. And if we all know personally about our own behaviors, and if you're trying to lose weight or if you're trying to quit smoking, those things take a lot of time. Yep. And so does turning around a restaurant. You can't do it in 5 days. At best, you can do it in 6 months.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Is that so when do you typically engage, or I would guess at probably all different levels or timelines, but are people calling you when the ship's going down, as well as they're probably calling you as startups, like you mentioned?
I do. I get everything in between. So I've only had a couple restaurants when I did the analysis goes, I'm sorry, you're just going to have to close.
Wow.
Because there are instances where you can't save a restaurant. And generally it's financially based.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've been there. And, you know, I love being able to get into startups or somewhere early in the process, because there's lots starting out for a new restaurateur of bumps in the road that they're going to hit. If I can just give them the heads up that it's coming and to prepare for it, it's less of a bump. And so that's what I love about working with startups. That's why I'm excited working with Marrakesh at PCM, because, you know, it's an opportunity really to kind of look ahead at what's going to happen after they open and be prepared.
Okay, so let's run through a little scenario or hypothetical here, right?
Sure.
So I'm Rich Casanova. I'm the owner of, give me a good restaurant.
Casanova's. Brand.
Just that. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what
it's
do we
been
serve?
Been tried and true, man.
I know.
All and, across
Carmel.
The United States.
Yeah, yeah. So what do we serve over there?
Obviously Italian food.
Okay, so I'm the owner of, thank you. I'm the owner of Casanova's Fine Italian Dining. And I call you because things are going south pretty quick, financially, employee-wise, losing our customers, and I'm kind of sweating it. So what's your first line of action, or how do you engage and take it from there?
Well, typically, and I get those calls, and so it's an assessment. It okay. generally takes me about 2 days to go through an operation and find out what the red flags are, where the fires are, whatever you want to call it. That's the easy part.
Okay, I mean, so what's on your short list when you're looking at some criteria?
Well, it's really looking at the basics. It's looking at people, like okay. what you said. So evaluating wait staff, evaluating back of the house staff, management staff, and whoever called me in. So the owner. Oh,
rut row. Okay, well, thanks, Jay, for being on the show. Whenever, yeah.
And then it's looking at processes. You know, is there, for example, the guy sitting at the bar, is there a process to record what he's drinking every night? So I look at processes. And so it's how food or beverage is delivered, how food comes in the back door, how it goes through the line, how it gets to the customer, and looking at quality of product, portions of product. And then a lot, you know, we all talk about, you know, walk into a restrooms in a restaurant and tell a lot about the operation.
That is true.
I mean, as a
consumer, it's just like that's one of the biggest turnoffs or whatever, you know. And I remember somebody used to say, if you're on an airline and the lap tray is kind of broken and not working, you're kind of wondering, how's the engine? You know, if they can't fix that, right? How's the engine working?
Absolutely. Yeah. And so, you know, the thing that you don't get to see as a consumer is the walk-in cooler. So
right.
that as a consultant, you can walk in the walk-in cooler, you can find out a lot about where their food cost is, what their food quality is, how well they train their employees, all from just walking into a walk-in cooler.
Yeah, the perishables are, because that's, what is the highest, besides labor, right? I would imagine labor is the highest cost. In
food typically
really?
Is the highest.
Food, okay. The actual, and so that's where, that could be a first key indicator of financial issue.
Absolutely. Right? Over-ordering, too much food. If you look at the health scores that you see online, right. You a lot of times see things aren't dated, things aren't rotated, things aren't the right temperature.
Wow.
So it's attention to detail in the restaurant business. It's 1,000 details, but those are the big ones that are an indicator of what's going on in an operation.
So it's the money, the cash flow, and then what systems they have in place, right? Because a lot of businesses, they've been probably successful for generations or years, and they've had a system that worked back in the day, right?
Absolutely.
But what's a tipping point where that no longer works or is costing them more than implementing a new system?
Well, the problems in the business over the years, so if somebody, I have had clients that have been in the business 25 or 30 years, the margins were different 30 years ago than they are today. And so there's not as much room for errors. So if you're not counting your inventory once a week, if you're not looking at people clocking in, clocking out, and really paying attention to the schedule, those things can add up to 3, 4, 5, 10% of sales, which a lot of times is folks' profit.
Right.
So that... there's some easy, what sounds easy, but right. There's a lot of work behind it. But that's what I do is I can easily come in and figure out what the problems are. The hard part, as we say, changing the behaviors takes time.
Yeah, because in those first 2 days, you can probably have a pretty good overview of what's going on right and wrong, right?
Absolutely.
And obviously from your restaurant experience as well. I mean, that's key.
Yes.
Right? And so in those 2 days, you're looking at cash flow on employees, on food cost. What else is on the...
It's interesting. So a lot of folks never get on a roof of a restaurant. A lot of managers are scared to go up a ladder. A lot of owners just don't understand, but there's $15,000 on the roof. And so by going up on the roof and walking through and seeing the mechanical systems and how it's been maintained and operated,
right.
I start there and go all the way... down to the drains.
Wow.
So
like a home inspector almost. Really
a home inspector. So you're looking at those kind of details in the business that during day-to-day operation, you never think to go on the roof.
Yeah. Unless you have a rooftop dining set up or whatever. Yeah.
Absolutely. So it's all the other details of the business, looking at how utilities are used, looking at suppliers, because a lot of times you can pay twice as much for a towel that's used in the back of the house from one restaurant to the next, and folks just don't either have the ability to shop it or it's just not really a concern to them. But there's lots of dollars to be had.
Yeah, as I'm hearing you speak, I've decided I'm not going to go in the restaurant business, right? It's like you mentioned, there's 1,000 things going on. I mean, my mind's just spinning from the plates to the linen to the employees to the uniforms to the carpeting to the... to the facilities, the air conditioning, and it's endless, right?
Yeah. Rich, I'd probably talk you out of getting into the business. I talk more new people that want to come into the business out than in.
Okay.
Because, I've seen a lot of people lose their life savings, over the course of my career because they made, poor decisions.
And, well, like Fred was saying, people just think it's this romantic idea. It's just going to be all entertainment, all fun, have your friends over there. But it's serious business, but it can be very profitable and very successful. So let's kind of finish out the last of the 2 days here. So fast forward, everything looks, doable, right? So how do they then decide, what's your business model, I guess, in the sense of, do you let's set up a 6-month program?
Typically, yes. So, to do that 2-day assessment, it's usually a 6-month to a 2-year engagement after that, depending on the scope of work. It's coaching at that point. It's, working with the restaurant managers, working with bartenders, working with the owners that are present in the restaurant, of then starting to implement, because what I learned at McDonald's, I was the gatekeeper of McDonald's for over 700 restaurants. And you never try to do more than 3 to 5 things at a time. Never make that more. Three changes is generally what I limit to.
Right.
So if you have a list of a dozen things, you take the three that make the most impact, implement, let those seed, and then you go on 60, 90 days, do the next two or three. And so that's why it takes 6 months or 18 months or 24 months, depending on the size of the list.
Right.
You can't do it all at one time.
That's an interesting takeaway from having been involved in 700 locations. Just tackling, you got to knock out three at a time is what you're saying.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So talk to, there were some notes here about minimum wage hikes for restaurants in New York City. I mean, that's been in the news a lot. What's your take on that?
It really has. Seattle's put them in place.
Right.
City of Seattle. Minimum wage is going to go up. It's really a shame that, at least from our standpoint, because, I read a lot of restaurant news every day keep up with the industry. But they're targeting, in New York City, they're targeting restaurant chains.
Wow.
They're leaving everyone else out. It's just QSR restaurants. And so that's why I really have some heartache about is they're not looking at minimum wage overall.
Across
they're really
the
targeting restaurants. And they
Just restaurants, not gas stations.
Yeah,
other
not
places,
gas stations, not convenience stores.
Right.
So wages are going to go up. Wages in this market, if you said, down at Pond City Market, they were going to pay somebody minimum wage, they'd laugh and walk out the door. So, reality is that we are paying much higher wages in the restaurants than what minimum wage is. But I definitely see it going up. I just hope that, through the Georgia Restaurant Association, the National Restaurant Association, and reaching out to our legislators, that they're just fair about the hikes. They don't just single out restaurant folks.
So that's what's kind of hot in the news right now. What about trends? What do you see trends in the industry?
It's interesting, because I see everything from what Fred does, at the higher end of the food chain, as I would call it. It's also, I work with companies like Mrs. Winners and Church's Chicken. So what's interesting, if you look at the food that's going through restaurants, it's definitely has less ingredients, less preservatives, no antibiotics in many cases. So I think our food that's coming through restaurants in general is getting healthier.
Right.
Now, it's going to take some chains longer than others. And obviously when you're talking about fine dining, especially within this city here, Buckhead, you find a lot of folks are really producing some great product with local ingredients. But that trend, it's not a trend anymore. It's just the way folks are doing business. And so when I talk to manufacturers, they're introducing me clean labels, which get rid of the high fructose corn syrup and all those things. So, the restaurant industry is really doing that, not being forced to do it. They're doing it because it's the right thing. It's not regulated.
Right.
It's really, that's one of the big things I see that really affects a lot of folks I'm working with. But other than that, it's interesting. Fred's got a tapas concept. A lot of restaurants are really, again, small plates are really popular. Folks are eating smaller portions. They want to share and try different things. Family style, is really starting to take off. I was just reading new restaurant opening in New York. That was going to be one of their features that's getting ready to, I think, open this weekend. So family style is really making a comeback and really, the communal part of eating is going from your home to the restaurant.
Right. You talk about smaller portions. They do that. And then so that way you leave room for dessert, right? And then sometimes you go to the restaurant, they bring out the dessert in a little cup like this, right? It's like, give me a straw or whatever. But so Chris and I are going to open our own Chinese restaurant. We're going to offer MSG on the side. I love doing that when I go to a Chinese restaurant. I ask the server, can I get some MSG on the side? They're like, they don't even know how to answer that, right? I mean, they're just like, we
I
got
think
rid
servers
of
must love you based on your comments about the 3% tips and now the MSG on the side.
Right, yeah.
You're a real popular guy in the restaurants, aren't you?
Well, most of them that I've gone to, they've asked, we do have a takeout menu and actually we'll deliver it to you. Yeah, we prefer I've gotten a lot of that. Yeah. Mr. Castle, why don't we just deliver it? It'd be easier for us, easier for you. Everybody's happy. Yeah, let's just go that route. Yeah. And there's actually, that's another trend is there's a lot of delivery companies that are specializing in restaurants that don't have the delivery to add that to your plate.
Absolutely.
Right. Mm-hmm. They'll take that off there and have that done for you. I mean, that's another revenue stream. Let's kind of have everybody jump back in, if you will. Actually, before we jump in some panel discussion questions. I got a few. So, Jay, let our listeners know the best way to find out about you, your company, your services. And
GoliathConsulting.com. That's our website.
Okay.
Got information on our clients, all the services that we offer. You'll see that we have an office in Norcross as well as one in Inman Park.
So who's the Goliath over there, or is there a, what's the, behind that name?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I was, I don't know if you guys read the information about Alphabet today and Google and all the issues they're having, but it's hard to find a name for your company where you can get a, you know, you can get a URL.
And then all the social media stuff, yeah.
And so literally we had to buy a program that's, you know, spins and shoots out all these numbers. And then, you know, we were three guys from McDonald's. So, you know, we figured Goliath, it popped up. We could get a, you
Should
know, get the URL.
Three guys from McDonald's.
Yeah, McDonald's is already taken. Yeah. All right. Always like hearing a little bit of the backstory there. So, so gentlemen, I got a couple of questions, maybe amongst yourselves here as well. But we talked about kind of trends in restaurants. We didn't mention it. What about catering for y'all? Fred, is that
so? Jay had some great points that I 100% agree with. Catering for us, it's just a totally different business.
Oh, big time.
So, it's one that you really have to commit to.
Right.
And I've seen other restaurateurs, well known friends of mine that I've talked to about it. And it's just not a business that we're jumping into. In fact, you know, when we get inbound orders, we often let people know this isn't something that we really specialize in. We'd be happy to do it. It's not going to be the cheapest option.
Right.
It's most likely going to be expensive, but we're happy to do it for you in the right conditions. And but a lot of times we do refer them to catering companies.
Yeah.
And there's a reason there. I mean, because I can't afford to have my managers, my staff at a 300-person wedding on a Saturday night. And not in the restaurant, and just doesn't work. And the cost of getting into that business where it's all of this, the silverware, the smallwares, all that stuff is an astronomical amount of money. And it's a treadmill you'll never get off of, because as soon as you do 100 person, you want to do a 300, you want to do a 500, you need to buy the smallwares, you need to get into that business, and you need to commit to it. I mean, I'm getting married this year, and we're not catering our own wedding.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Yeah. Well, it's interesting you mentioned that, because you kept the operative word, that business. It's in your mind, I think I'm hearing, it's really a whole separate entity. You know, most people think, you got a restaurant, just go bring out some food to our event.
There's
a whole other business.
Businesses that are naturally predisposed to be good catering businesses.
Yeah.
I mean, I think barbecue is a great example.
Yeah.
You know, it's food that holds really well for long periods
of
time.
Okay, yeah, that's...
But, you know... Our businesses just aren't that way as much. And I think that you do have to commit to making it a part of your business and really focusing on it. And you need salespeople. You got to go out there and get the business.
Right. And then the transportation, the insurance. Let's talk about kind of catering from your perspective as a consultant, and then from Chris on the NCR Silver, as far as, you know, that mobile application.
Yeah, so it's pretty easy to support, obviously, with a cloud-based mobile technology of a catering. In many ways, it's similar to the food truck.
Right, right. Without the wheels.
Exactly.
Do you do much consulting for businesses that are just caterers, or restaurants that are offering catering services? And to Fred's point, is that, does that sometimes, is there a downfall, or is that can be profitable?
So I do consulting with some catering companies just on process and menu. And, but Fred's absolutely right. You know, I have a client right now that's starting small scale catering. They just have the kitchen space and the folks to do it because they have 9 restaurants. But, you know, their next step is a separate facility, strictly catering, you know, a whole production facility.
Right.
But if you look at the industry, catering, delivery, taking food to where people are is a huge trend that continues to grow. If you look at the QSR world, you know, you start to see delivery from McDonald's and Taco Bell. If you look at, you know, like Fred was saying, barbecue or fried chicken or sandwiches, all those folks, their businesses are growing through delivery and
as well as
online.
Speaking of delivery, it still blows my mind. We have Jimmy John's comes over here, right? You ever see him in Buckhead?
They're incredible, man. I don't know how they deliver those sandwiches so fast, but it is fantastic.
They really are.
It's
that process. the sandwiches aren't the best out there,
right,
but they sell more of them probably than anybody in the area because their delivery is like insane.
It is crazy. It's like I'll be coming down the elevator. I mean, we could probably look out the window right now and I'd put $100. Probably we haven't been looking out during the show, but Erica, we should have assigned you that. Add that to your task. She's like,
there's probably a Jimmy John's driver at one of my restaurants 12 times a day, probably, really? For my staff.
But they're,
I'm not
but,
even
yeah,
kidding.
But they're on it's bikes funny. Here in Buckhead. And they'll be coming down Lenox right here on their bike, and they'll be in the elevator. And at first, when we first moved in, they're carrying like a couple of bags and some beverages, would right? And then they'll carry a single sandwich on their bike, and come deliver it. And then then finally, I was walking some people up the road up here to a restaurant, and there's a guy, Jimmy John's. He had a single soda in his hand. I'm like, seriously? Like he can't go down to the vending machine, the refrigerator?
Like, you know, technology in many ways is enabling that. We, as an example, on Silver, allow you to line bus. So you could pull out in front of a line of 40, 50 people, take the orders in advance. Once you've taken the order, it goes back. By the time you come around the line, you can actually just pick up. And so in that fashion, if you've got long queues, you know, you take Silver on an iPad, you walk out, you actually take the orders. Go one step farther, inside of NCR Silver, the ability to tell when orders comes in from a logistics, it's a light amount of logistics, the ability to tell closest location within a customer so that you can pass orders from one location to another if you're a franchise, as an example. And so it's technology that's helping Jimmy John's do that.
Right, yeah.
You're absolutely right. They do a phenomenal job of that.
So I could go on my smartphone, my Droid, and get my Uber driver to come over, hit the NCR Silver to get my Jimmy John's on his bicycle to follow me alongside and deliver it to my window.
Exactly. And it's the ability to shrink that window from time to order to time to delivery is all about how many of these folks that, you know, do the delivery are closing the business.
And there's a ton of money pouring into that space right
really?
Now. I mean, for food startups, it's incredible to kind of merge that technology side of it with the brick and mortar side of things.
Yeah.
And we're seeing it a lot because a lot of those companies are, you know, trying to sell to us.
Oh, really?
But it's very interesting because a lot of people are going at those markets in totally different ways. It's going to be very interesting to see how that's all going to succeed.
So let's talk about, maybe industry, networking or organizations. You mentioned the Georgia Restaurant Association. What other groups or events that y'all go to? I have a buddy in the, with Vienna Beef and other people in the food business. And, for years, he always used to say he's going up to the NRA show, right? Not that NRA, right?
Right.
So that's the big one, I think, in Chicago, right?
Yeah, the show was amazing this year. I was up on the floor for 3 full days.
Wow.
As well as came in early just to do some recon in Chicago for some of the brands I'm working with. But the show was amazing. It's the whole convention center. If you've been to Chicago, you know how big that convention center is. They take every floor.
Wow.
It was just phenomenal. And, you know, POS competition, I feel for you because every other guy was selling cloud-based POS.
Oh, yeah.
And what was interesting, just a quick, was, you know, that's where you can really see the trend. So compostable, disposable, friendly packaging was huge this year. Again, what I talked about earlier in terms of clean labels and getting rid of high fructose corn syrup and all that was another big one. And some really cool equipment innovations that, you know, there was even a robotic display of a robot cooking fries and
really?
Stuff that was kind of funny. I got some video of but it really is you know, it's a mecca for me to go once a year just to really learn what's going on in the industry. And you know, I do a lot of business on the floor, so I have a whole lot of contacts I work with. So it's amazing few days in Chicago.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that because I mean, and in conjunction with the minimum wage thing, you have a company like McDonald's. I mean, you push hard enough on a beast like McDonald's, they're going to figure out ways to eliminate labor.
Yeah.
And they're just going to pay the fewer employees.
Right.
I mean, over time, what do you think they're going to do? I mean, if the margins disappear, they're not going to just sit around and go out of business.
It's funny you say that, Fred, because there was an article last week. They had to get, you know, one of the communications people or one of the officers to go, we're not going to do that. But I know.
Oh, yeah.
The systems are in place when I was there to eliminate a lot of folks.
Wow, that's I'm just frustrated we're out of time here, because that's a whole nother thing about just technology and what that's bringing to the table. So you could envision a real world scenario. You go to almost any place now, supermarket, and you self check yourself out or whatever, right?
Right.
So you go to McDonald's, the machine's out making the food, becomes just basically a bricks and mortar vending machine on
total automation, restaurant automation.
Right. Yep. Yeah. I mean, how far?
It's coming.
Right?
It's available. It's just really execution at this point in my eyes.
So that begs the question then. So then you'd have the robot in the kitchen making your dinner. Robot server would come out and serve it. How much do you tip a robot server?
Yeah. Wow. There's certain pieces of it that, you know, especially on the higher end, there's always that need for interaction. But I feel like on the lowest ends of the QSR side of things, I mean, the experience that a customer gets in a Taco Bell from a service person, maybe not that much better than what they're going to get from a robot, to be honest with you.
So. All right. So good thing Taco Bell's not sponsoring the show. All right. So, gentlemen.
And I love Taco Bell.
I know.
Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. I drove to get Chinese food the other night and then passed by a Taco Bell. I'm thinking, I haven't been there in a while.
I think it's a prerequisite. You have to be drunk or stoned to go to a Taco Bell. It's a prerequisite.
And we are internet broadcasting, so we're okay with that. Yeah. But speaking of, that was actually, now that I think about it, flashback, that was my very first job. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Was that Taco Bell? And
I thought you were going to say the first time you went to Taco Bell was when you were stoned.
Well, that was the second when that's why I got fired.
Yeah.
No. But I can remember my first job at Taco Bell, and I was all excited. Imagine getting excited about this, and I come home smelling like beans. Is that they gave me a Black & Decker drill with a long drill bit. In my job, I was a chief bean driller. So you had to drill the beans to get them on. So anyway, that's a great vision
that's
to
awesome.
Close on. Yeah. We'll see y'all next time. Rich Casanova over here, thanking our guests and our sponsors for being part of Food and Beverage Radio. See you next time.